better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
All right, Tyler, let's get into this game last night. Let's get into something positive, because Arkansas did happen to win, both on the baseball diamond, where they beat Grand Canyon 10-9, and then on the basketball court, on the hardwood, against Vanderbilt last night. Defensively, their defense was tremendous, and we can get into Reggie Chaney and Ethan Henderson, what they provided, both starting for Ethan and then off the bench for Reggie. They locked Saban Lee down, and Tommy, I don't know if you noticed, but one of the things that they did last night was Isaiah Rice is averaging less than a point per game per season for Vanderbilt. He's shooting 33%. Saban Lee is Vandy's best player. In the first half, they double-teamed Saban Lee and just dared Isaiah Rice to shoot it. He at one point was 0 for 4. I don't know what he finished at the game, but was broke as a joke last night. Tremendous defensive strategy for Eric Musselman, and they just locked him down. They put the clamps on him the majority of the night.
Well, I mean, Saban Lee still had 30 points in the game, so that's locking someone down. But
I'm talking about the overall defense, Tom, because at one point Vanderbilt had 17% shooting. I need to go back and see what they finished.
For the game, they finished 38%. Field goal percentage.
Yeah, so they locked him down.
But they didn't lock Saban Lee down. And 6 of 24 from behind the three-point stripe. Defense was good last night, no question.
Yeah, and it was really, really good in the first half. Now, Vandy got things more going in the second half, but you got to give credit to Saban Lee and some of the other guys there. I really liked watching Scott, Tommy, I was a little starstruck last night. I walked right next to Scottie Pippen last night. He was watching his son, Scottie Pippen Jr., play. Now, he's not really a social guy. I didn't say a word to him because I could just tell he didn't seem like he wanted to talk. And I actually talked to one of my buddies who covers Vanderbilt, and Scottie tends to stay out of the spotlight. He doesn't like to talk to people and stuff, which I understand. But defensively, they're good. And then offensively, you got to start with Desi Sills. 5 for 6 from the three-point line, and the 1-3 that he missed went in and out. And I know Eric Musselman spoke to his performance after the game and said he took so many good shots. And it was funny. So when he was on, when Arkansas was going on my end of the floor when I was sitting courtside last night, a sub for Vanderbilt came in, and Desi just started saying mismatch, 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 because he wanted the ball, I guess. But it's unbelievable to watch. Like, it's one thing when you're up in the media, Tommy, and you're watching from a distance at how quick these guys are. But when Desi's pump fake is so like his shot, so when if you even come out like the slightest bit or jump over him a little bit, he's going to blow by. His rim presence, his rim run is so – he goes with such a tenacity, such a pace out.
Yeah.
It was really fun to watch courtside for the first time in a while last night.
There was a play last night where he was spotted up in the corner going to take a three. The Vanderbilt defender comes out, gets airborne. He goes around and drives to the hole and quickly comes up the baseline and then draws. He doesn't make the shot, but draws foul, gets contact at the rim, goes to the free throw line. And that was a play where he attacked the rim rather than shooting the three, and it was fairly early in the game and picked up a foul on the Vanderbilt defender. You're exactly right. He's not just an outside spot-up shooter. He can attack the rim, too, and that's what he needs to do more of.
Yeah, and Arkansas, it was worrisome for a little bit because they didn't start hot out of the gate. They missed their first four shots. Vandy was up, I think, two or three early, and then Arkansas, Mason Jones got hot, and the rest of the team followed suit. But you're worried at one point that they were going to get off to a slow start, and then they really took over in the first half. And if you look at the lead changes last night, Tommy, Arkansas has held a lead for 37 minutes last night. You know what that's compared to the rest of the season? That's so much better, because typically, as we've watched many times this season, Arkansas is the one trailing. It wasn't the case last night.
And Vanderbilt made a little bit of a run at the end. There were a couple plays that got some people irate and set off. There's a couple technical fouls late in the game. They just couldn't quite put Vanderbilt away until they broke their will. Vanderbilt kept fighting, And, you know, actually, I think the game's final score of 86-73, I think Arkansas was a little more dominant than the final score indicates, actually.
So you mentioned the technicals. One was called on Reggie Chaney. The other was called on Eric Musselman. Now, Isaiah Joe was and Mason Jones, when they fouled out, were both close to picking up techs. I was watching that and monitoring that closely, and they were luckily that they got off the floor without being given one. So to the technicals, let me explain it a little bit because some people were confused why Reggie got a tech. He took issue with the hard foul on Isaiah Joe towards the end of the game, and he started chirping a little bit. There was a little bump, and that's why he was officiated the tech. In that situation, Tommy, I know Eric Musselman, like, this is Reggie's second tech of the season. You're not happy about that. And I know you have to keep your cool despite something happens. But if you're defending one of your teammates, can you? Is there a little bit of positive that Mus is like, hey, Reggie, there's none at all. You don't take any at all out of that.
From the coaching perspective or the officiating perspective?
Coaching perspective.
Yeah, I think you, if you're Eric Musselman, you can understand that a little more as to why he was received the tackle because he's defending a player. But still, you got to keep your composure. What if this had been a two-point game at that point? That wasn't, and maybe he calculated that into his actions. But I think, again, we go back to a conversation we had earlier in this week. From a head coaching perspective, the only person allowed to get a technical foul on the team is who? The head coach. He gets
the
one,
coach.
That's a whole different set of rules and circumstances than a player or anyone on the bench, an assistant coach, a manager, anyone else getting one is that you operate by different rules than the head coach. So you're always going to have issue from a coach like Eric Musselman when a player gets a technical foul for a situation like this.
I've never been on the coaching perspective. I guess I've coached like younglings before playing, but that's the extent. It's never been that level. I would just find like it may be the slightest of positives. And if I'm Isaiah, I'm happy Reggie came to my defense, because when a situation like that, I don't think anything was going to escalate last night. I don't think the egos of Vanderbilt, that they don't just seem like a team that's going to get after you and start a brawl or anything. But there were a few chippy fouls last night, Tommy, on both Mason and Isaiah, where Vanderbilt players laid into them pretty good. And I appreciate what Reggie did. I know you could say it was a bonehead play, but I understand where he's coming from, where he feels like that, hey, this is getting out of hand. I need to say something in order for it to stop.
Yeah. I think the other play that, you know, kind of set off a chain of things that probably led up to a technical foul on Mus with about a minute to go that really had little to no bearing, Mason Jones on a free throw rebound got tangled up with another player and was called for a foul.
Scottie Pippen Jr.
Yeah. And, you know, from the camera angles we were shown on TV, it doesn't appear like there was much there. If you look at the overhead angle, I can't tell you whether it was a foul or not. I just know Mason Jones' left arm and Pippen's maybe right arm got tangled. Now, was that foul on Jones? Was that foul on Pippen? Was it a no call? I'll let you decide on that what your opinion is. There was, you know, as he reached around, there was, you know, some, you can see their arms got tangled up. Whether or not that was a foul or not, you know, that was in the official judgment, it was. That, then you had the jump ball where the guy was on the floor and they were just probably trying to get the play killed and get to shut down before something else happened. That led to Mus coming out of the box and running down the sideline. He received a technical foul. None of it really meant much because it didn't have any bearing on the outcome. It just made for a bumpy landing for this game last night.
So from what I saw live, it looked like, I think it was Scottie Pippen Jr. flopped, and they gave Mason the foul and ended up fouled out. The sequence that occurred that you just talked about, Isaiah fouled out, and real quick, was that a block or a charge? Again, I don't have the ref knowledge, but it looked like a charge to me because it looked like Isaiah was there and the player just ran over him. But was that a block or a charge from what you saw?
I need to go back. I was thinking about these other plays. Let me go back and pull that one up and look at it again.
Okay, so Isaiah fouls out, then Mason fouls out, and then the jump ball you're referring to where Gene Telsillo is on the floor. Eric Musselman thought he had the timeout. He wasn't given the timeout, and then he ends up going off. He really didn't yell at the ref. He just reacted loudly.
He ran down the box. You know, just bench,
correct.
Bench decorum is the term.
Yeah, so I haven't seen. Is that the only game that Arkansas has had two techs
in
one game?
I think that I saw Hawks stats post that was their ninth of the year. Again, these had no bearing on the outcome. You know, I don't know that Musk does that if it's a tight game. He probably composes himself a little more, but you could see that, you know, his players and his assistant coaches were quick to get him back because of where he was at. He was well outside the box, all the way up to the possession arrow at half court, and you know, you're susceptible to additional penalty. You're gonna run up there and then, you know, and lose your cool.
Yeah, so he did that. Let's see. I'm trying to think what else happened as far as like that goes last night. There was a box out play that I initially didn't, but then I watched it again, and yeah, that was a foul on Isaiah. But I think that at a certain point last night, it was starting to get a little frustrating for fans because they felt like the lead was slipping away. But Desi continuously, Tommy, knocked down shot, big shot after big shot. Again, he missed 1 3-pointer last night, goes 5 for 6. You hope you can get that type of consistency if they do play against South Carolina tonight.
Yeah, and, you know, Arkansas had two fewer fouls than Vanderbilt in the game last night. So, you know, again, people, you know, want to draw, you know, some anger from the end-of-game situation. It just felt a little bumpy last night. I know this. If they play South Carolina, and I'm fully expecting them to play, just buckle up. Get ready. South Carolina is a physical team that fouls a lot. There's going to be a lot of fouls in a game with Arkansas and South Carolina. There was the last time. There's going to be this time. So don't be surprised, and don't be calling in here yelling and screaming about officiating when there's a lot of fouls.
No. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of fouls called in this game because South Carolina is a physical team that's going to force that kind of game. And there's going to be fouls, and they're going to get called.
Tommy, why don't you want people to call in and yell about officiating? That's the best type of sports talk.
I'm just
that's
telling
fantastic.
You what's going to happen because South Carolina is one of the most penalized teams in the conference because they play a very physical brand of basketball. And a lot of their physicality leads to fouls. And people are going to be upset about the number. Well, look at how many fouls and free throws we had in this game. It was just a horrible watch. This, that. That's the kind of game South Carolina wants. That's who they are. What happened last time is what happens in many of their games.
We always welcome officiating criticism on the show. Tommy, do we not?
I do not, no.
Okay. All right, Caleb from Darnell texts in. He kind of liked how they responded when Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones get out. Again, those are your two best scorers. Those are your two best playmakers. Arkansas, I think, was up at 12, or they were up a little over 10 at that point when they both fouled out, and yet they were able to close out the game. I think that's one of the positives that you can also take away from last night's performance. They mixed
up the worst team in the league. Let's not get carried away about last night's performance. You beat an awful Vanderbilt team.
Yeah, I know, but Tommy, they also won two games last week. They're at home, so there were some things on their side. But no,
They're 11-21, dude. 11-21.
Tommy, do you see me like getting just blissfully excited on the show right now? No,
I can hear it starting to bubble a little bit in your voice.
I literally have not said anything that would like blow over the top. I've just been pointing out some stuff. One of the things they did do, Tommy, is they started Ethan Henderson and they went four guards. Now, in the post-game press conference, Tommy, they mentioned Eric Musselman said that he asked Desi if he wanted to start tonight or not. And he said, no, I felt like I could give a spark off the bench. And Ethan Henderson and Reggie Chaney, the defensive performance they brought tonight, and really Ethan started it from the jump. He ended up with three blocks, altered a bunch of other different shots. He missed a bunny at the very beginning, so I was kind of worried if that was the type of performance he had. But him and Reggie both provided the defensive performance that they're going to need against South Carolina tonight.
And when you look at Adriel Bailey not starting and Ethan Henderson starting in his spot, more or less, the fact that Adriel didn't start is not eyebrow-raising to me. The fact that Adriel Bailey played 5 minutes in the game is what's concerning me. I mean, he got two fouls in 5 minutes. That to me, is the thing you look at and say, Adriel Bailey, 5 minutes, 15 seconds in the game last night, didn't take any shots. He made 2 of 4 free throws. Does that raise your eyebrows a little bit that he played such a limited amount of time?
Not really. I mean, they won last night, so I think there's a lot more positives. You can take out negatives, but you're going to need him. I think that's what you're more referring to, the SLA. Like, he can't have those type of statistics tonight. against South Carolina. They're going to need him to pop a three. They're going to need him to get five or so rebounds, and it just depends on what he goes. And I would assume now South Carolina is a little bigger than Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt was forced to go to a smaller lineup due to some injuries. So I'm wondering how much that played into the factor of Musk going with four guards and Ethan in that lineup. So that's something to think about tonight. Let's see. We talked about the defensive kind of performance they put up, and they doubled Saven Lee. Now, he did have a good game, but it was really the clamps they put on the entire team. The bench production, though, because of Desi's performance off the bench, Tommy, they beat Vanderbilt 27-10 in bench production. How many times have we said that this season where Arkansas has beaten an opponent when it comes to bench points?
Yeah, and again, that number's skewed because could Desi – if you just took your players with the most minutes, your five players with the most minutes, that number probably looks a little different because Desi Seals would be inside those top five because Ethan Henderson only played 16 minutes as a starter. So sometimes that bench number, as far as scoring and the disparity, can be a little tricky because you could almost consider Desi Seals playing 25 minutes last night a starter in this game, even though he wasn't one of the first five out.
Yeah, must mention, I forget what post-game press conference he mentioned, but he talked about how Desi, though he doesn't typically play the first three or so minutes of both the first half and the second half, he closes out the game. He's one of your closing guys late in stretch. And I thought, listen, Jalen Harris has been vastly inconsistent last night, but I thought Jalen had a pretty good game. He knocked down a three, which was big, where he put Scottie Pippen Jr. on skates. It looked like Scottie Pippen Jr. was going to fall into the baseline last night with how quick that Jalen Harris just stopped and spotted up for three. He had a couple good passes last night. I think about the one where he went between his legs and behind him was Desi Seals where he found a three. You're going to need Jalen to continue to have a solid performance because he has been a guy that if he can hit a three or two threes or have a good assist because his turnovers have been a problem at some time this season. You're going to need him to play well against the Game Talks tonight.
Morning Rush brought to you by World of Wireless, 877-305-DISH. That's 877-305-3474. We may all be at home watching TV soon, and that's all we're doing. So you need good TV service from World of Wireless, 877-305-DISH. Also ask about internet service when you call. You can get a $100 Visa gift card, local installation, all your favorite channels to watch whatever games are going to be on, and you get your movie channels free for the first 90 days as well. If you're paying over $100 a month for your satellite or cable now, it's time to make the move to Dish. 877-305-DISH. That's 877-305-3474.
Coming up, we'll get into some Eric Musselman, Mason Jones, and Isaiah Joe audio. We'll keep you updated on everything going on with the different happenings as far as the sports world goes. Will we see Arkansas play South Carolina tonight? That's a big question. We don't know at this point. We're planning on being there, but we don't know if that game is going to occur.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
He does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
All right, let's go to the phone lines where Tom Murphy is waiting. Tom, good morning. I want to start first with something that came out yesterday. Mark Emmert and the NCAA are considering, I know your hometown Atlanta is where the Final Four is going to be played, they're considering moving out of Mercedes-Benz Stadium and into a smaller place. You got a destination you think they should go play, man, if they're going to play the Final Four somewhere?
Well, they could do an old tribute and have it at Georgia Tech's basketball arena to bring back the 2008 tornado, which I was in the Georgia Dome when that thing hit. But, no, this news yesterday was all just going at the speed of sound. I was marveling with my wife last night at how back in the old days, this amount of news would have trickled out probably over days, but yesterday it was just one press, announcement after the other with the cancellation of this, that, and the other, and or fans not being in the stands, and it was it's pretty startling how quickly everything kind of moved and resolved itself, and you could see the pain in Greg Sankey's face that fans aren't going to be at Bridgestone Arena for the rest of this tournament.
So, Tom, I want to ask about that. And I asked Tommy about it earlier, and I think it's a good point that we have to evaluate. because of social media, do you think all of what's going on is amplified to what it would have been even 10 years ago?
Everything that happens now is amplified. Coach gets into an altercation with a player. Someone's got it on video, and it gets blown up. And universities' responses to these types of things sometimes can get swayed by public opinion or by social media outrage. And it's bizarre, but that's the way things are now. And, you know, in some ways it's good that news of, you know, of travel bans and things like that can get spread so quickly. And I do think all these bodies are acting out of an abundance of precaution. And but we're seeing people catching or being testing positive for coronavirus in ways like, you take Rudy Gobert. So if he tested positive, then the referee who worked his game, he can't work. They have to suspend like the next game, and the players that are in that would be involved in that game, and it branches out from there. And I guess that's how these pandemics take place. And so that's where we find ourselves today.
Hey, yeah. Tommy, let me ask Tom real quick. So Rudy Gobert, you brought him up. Tom, how ticked would you be? Because Gobert took all the reporters' mics and stuff. How angry and mad would you be if a guy did that and ended up having coronavirus? Because he was making fun of the disease, ends up getting it, and now he's put all the reporters' lives that he touched in. I mean, I would be infuriated if that happened to me.
Ty, I honestly did not see that bit of news last night. I just saw the crawl and the guys on the SEC network talking about it. But, yeah, livid that he made fun and took those extra steps and acting like a kid. Really sad.
You know, Tom, oftentimes when we have a tragedy or a disaster, you know, going back to 9/11 or just, you know, on smaller scales when a tornado has hit a town or a state, sports are what kind of get us back together. Sports has been what gets our mind off of whatever the trouble of the day has been. And mm-hmm. Now we're talking about canceling sports, perhaps, maybe even not having March Madness could be the next thing. Who knows what today's news headlines will bring us. This is going to be kind of an uncharted territory from the standpoint that sports is usually what brings us all back together, and there may not be sports to play with the NBA suspending seasons. We'll see if other people follow suits. But oftentimes, sports is what we turn to in times of tragedy or times of uncertainty, which is, I think, how you describe what we have right now.
Yeah, folks like us, we're just conditioned that every day we look at the sports calendar and we see what we're going to consume as entertainers. And it would be pretty sad and boring, I guess, to deal with day after day with not having that. However, I do hope outside the NBA that the games will go on. I know NHL is looking into its options today too, and hopefully postseason basketball will live on. I don't get why you would not hold the NCAA basketball tournament unless, you know, people involved, officials or what have you, start testing positive. But I think they've made, you know, drastic measures. Hopefully they go in place and they're effective, and this thing starts to ebb back.
Yeah, and to spin it forward to the conversation with the Razorbacks, we're talking about baseball games that are played in the Southeastern Conference, other campus sporting events. Not just the SEC tournament that are going to be played without fans. Arkansas is going to go to Starkville this weekend, and it kind of brings home the reality of the situation we're all facing together when we're watching events from around the country that's going to be played in front of empty venues.
It's just wild to think that Duty Noble Field, they did all those renovations, and this would be the opening conference weekend for them, and that place would be hopping. Because they're playing good ball too, and the Razorbacks come in, and it's going to be limited to, you know, a skeleton crew of people out there. It's just amazing. And, you know, on the campus this weekend, there's a gymnastics meet against Penn State that now will be kind of silent, other than they play music during it, which that's good. And then I think softball against Georgia this weekend too. So From now until March the 30th, at a minimum, we're going to be dealing with some weird stuff that we'll be talking about for the rest of our lives.
Tom Murphy with us on the Morning Rush. Tom, what's your gut feeling tell you about the games tonight in the SEC tournament? Do they go through and do they play these games tonight?
Well, I mean, I don't see why not. The teams are all there. They've got the restricted access to it. So I would like to think that they're going to play them. Unless you guys have read something, you know, new and breaking this morning, I don't see why they wouldn't.
I think so. I'm forgetting if it was Rothstein or some college basketball guy, but they were at least exploring the idea of potentially suspending the tournament. And so, Tom, let's say if they suspend the SEC tournament, or they cancel it, or the NCAA tournament, could there be a scenario where they pick this thing back up in a month or 2 months or so? Or if you see them just completely doing away with the NCAA tournament altogether, if they do in fact go that route?
Well, that's bizarre, but I would think that everything's on the table in regard to how they complete a season. The spread of this has been kind of shocking when you see the way it's popped up here and there. And even though young, healthy people like Rudy Gobert or whoever just probably have symptoms for a few days or a couple of weeks and they get over it, the effect on the elderly and the young is what you've got to be very careful of, and the mortality rate is higher. So, I suspect that in the history books, this chapter is going to be pretty wild with how this thing spread and what it impacted.
Tom, let me ask you about the game last night. Arkansas beat Vanderbilt 86-73. Just want to get your thoughts on the game. Mason Jones led the Razorbacks with 22 points in the game. They play South Carolina, that's at least the schedule, again tonight to move on to possibly the quarterfinals. What are your thoughts, your observations from last night's win over Vanderbilt?
They did a great job controlling Saban Lee in the first half. And Vanderbilt shot, I don't know, the last time I saw a shooting performance as poor as their first half. And for a while, Arkansas wasn't really taking advantage of it. They shot poorly to start with, but then I think Isaiah Joe hit a couple threes and Desi Sills hit one, and they got that separation and they were able to pretty much maintain it the rest of the way. I don't know if you guys stay up to the very end, man. There was a kind of a technical fest with Reggie Chaney got one for mouthing, and then Eric Musselman got one for leaving the coach's box after he had been warned. But it got pretty crazy, and when will we ever see Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe foul out of a game again? Probably never.
Yeah, and then, you know, just your thoughts on the South Carolina game. This was a physical, tough game the last time. Adriel Bailey played a limited number of minutes last night. You wonder if they're saving him a little bit for this game, which I think is going to be a slugfest with Arkansas and South Carolina.
Yeah, it could be. And South Carolina, it's like the old 40 minutes of hell. They'll just keep fouling you, and at some point the refs aren't going to call some of those. And then you get frustrated, but they play a whole bunch of people. They have guard depth. The guys on the network last night pointed out that they've kind of got the backcourt that can defend and hang with Arkansas' spectacular guard. In that last game, Trey Hannibal just went off for them, or had a really good game, drove the ball to the hole, but the kid averages 4 points a game. Yeah. I mean, he's like ninth on the team in scoring. So and Keyshawn Bryant and Jermaine Cousinard did not do much of anything in that game, and South Carolina still won. They shot it real well. Can't imagine that they'll shoot it the same. Mike Kotsar is questionable, which obviously impacts their front court depth. He had a good game against them the last time. And I think Joe and Jones fouling out saved them their legs a few minutes, which in the long run could help them.
Yeah.
So I think Arkansas has got every shot in the world at winning this game tonight, and even in the season series with South Carolina, and advancing on and taking on LSU.
Let me ask you this question. This game's going to be played with very few people in the stands, like a couple hundred people, just immediate family. No atmosphere at all. No fans hollering, booing on every whistle from one direction of the arena or another. What kind of bearing do you think that has on the players? The game atmosphere obviously isn't going to be there. How does that change the parameters of the game today? Do you think the players played differently? Do you think the game's officiated differently? How do you think that the empty stadium will affect the actual performance on the floor?
I don't know, Tom. That's a great question. But I would say minimally on just how the game flows. Now, referees sometimes, I think, get influenced by the home court crowd on charge block calls and some other things. Mm-hmm. And you don't have that as much. But if I recall, that Georgia Tech completion of the SEC tournament in 2008, I thought the bands might have been there and the cheerleaders. Yeah. So there was still a little bit of a sound. But I think in Bridgestone it'll be different because it's a bigger arena.
And you didn't have a pandemic.
It will sound a bit like catacombs probably.
Yeah.
And we'll be able to overhear the TV guys sometimes. I'll tell you, one time I heard Bob Huggins at a game in like Puerto Rico or something. You could hear every profanity that came out of his mouth that day because there was a microphone by the court. And it was shocking at how frequently he cursed. We might overhear a little bit of that tonight.
So, Tom, you mentioned that, and we'll top off the interview with this. Kentucky gets this home field advantage. They get this home court advantage. This traditionally is 90-95% Kentucky when the Wildcats play in this arena. That's gone. That's done. If they do, in fact, finish the SEC tournament, could you see this helping the other teams dethrone Kentucky in Nashville?
But yeah, the minor edge that Kentucky won't have. It's a huge crowd there. However, we were chatting yesterday at the baseball game. If there's going to be 50-year-old guys wearing blue that are like ball boys, miraculously, and the guys who mop up the court and all, they'll just be all over the place. They'll be the ushers. You know, they'll tip their way into the stadium. Now, that's a joke. But they managed to have a decent-sized crowd, if I remember, in the in Georgia Tech's arena. But they were upset. Yeah, if you guys, I think Georgia beat them. Georgia or Mississippi State beat Kentucky in the 2008 tournament.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But you didn't
an upset.
But the circumstances are different. That was a tornado that forced that. This is a health scare, a pandemic. They will be much more limited in who they let in based on that because they just don't want the exposure.
Yeah, that's true, Tommy. I can't remember the numbers of folks who were let into that arena, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but anyway, there were Kentucky fans milling about. I remember, and folks got offered a lot of money for their press credentials to go into that after the tornado that hit the Georgia Dome. So, yeah, you're right. I'm sure it'll be a lot more restrictive to fans and just real essential teams. But I'm sure a few of the high-dollar folks are going to make their way in as part of the team entourage.
They're all of a sudden family, all of a sudden.
Yeah,
yep.
Family or something. Tom, a couple friends that cover Vanderbilt, obviously their season's done with Vanderbilt losing Arkansas last night, and I was joking and with my buddy, and I was like, and 100% joke, I was like, you should sell your credentials to a Kentucky fan. You'd probably make a good $400-$500 off that. And he was like, no, dude, because I'd get disbarred from ever coming back. And I was kidding, of course, but that's actually something that gone down before. So, Tom, as always, man, we appreciate you joining us on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Stay safe, and we'll talk next week.
Yep, it's going to be a strange new world we're going to be talking about over the next few weeks. We'll see how it plays out. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll have some sports to talk about next week, Tommy. That's what I hope, honestly, they'll finish the SEC tournament and they'll continue the NCAA tournament as planned, but I guess we'll see on that. So, Tommy, I asked Tom his gut feeling about tonight. What's your gut feeling about tonight? Do they go through with these basketball games in Nashville tonight?
I think so. And I mean, the problem is we don't know how the news will change. I agree with Tom. As long as a player, you know, the NBA was forced to do something because they had a player that tested positive. As long as there's not a player, an official, someone that's come into close contact with these student athletes and these coaches and the game officials and just on and on, as long as none of that in that control group, if you will, test positive, I don't see why you couldn't continue to play games.
So what the story I mentioned, I sent Tom the video of what Rudy Gobert did. He made basically made fun of the coronavirus. He got up and then came back, touched all the reporters, different recording devices and stuff. Since then, he has been declared that he tested positive for coronavirus, which would just blow a gasket in my mind if a guy did that I was covering it did that. But with Tom mentioned this earlier, Tommy, with these athletes that are in the prime of their just physical being, and when it comes to just in being physical shape and just their immune system being as strong as it is compared to where it would be as an infant or a player, I don't know if you necessarily see that, but the people you mentioned, maybe like an older trainer, an older referee, I think those guys are specifically are much likely more to get affected than any of the players. But that could honestly, that could transition to the players depending on the physical contact or just the what's going to go on these next couple days.
Obviously, if you are taking chemo, you are already in bad health. You have lung conditions already that are pre-existing. You need to be indoors, regardless if it's a sporting event or otherwise. Now's not the time to be out. You know, I know that I've got a family member that's living in a assisted living nursing home situation. They're checking your temperature when you walk in and asking you, have you been to Italy? Have you been to the West Coast? You know, asking questions because you can't get this kind of virus running rampant in nursing homes. It could be very lethal in that type of environment. So is the flu. So is a lot of other of more common ailments that we have to deal with. This one, there's just a great bit of unknown, and there is no pill, there is no protocol on really how to deal with it. And that's the scary part is, all right, you go to the doctor, you test positive, they're going to put you in quarantine, but I'm not sure from there, it's probably just lack of knowledge on what you do. Because they gave you Tamiflu. If you got the flu, there is no, you know, Tama Corona pill, you know. So that's what they're working on right now to try to come up with that magic potion.
Yeah, I think the protocol right now is self-quarantine. I don't know how many people are abiding by that or going through that, but I think that is the case right now.
Yeah, so, but if you get the flu, what do? You self-quarantine. You go home and you stay in your room and you stay away from your kids and your wife because you don't want them to get it. So
yeah, and I know last night, Tommy, I don't know if you saw Fred Hoiberg, the Nebraska head basketball coach, formerly of Iowa State. He was on the sidelines, and he had to leave the game last night. Now, this is released from Nebraska's basketball Twitter account that he was diagnosed with influenza A, which is just a common cold, which is,
it's not
again,
a cold, it's the flu.
It's flu, flu. So they have, in parentheses, a common cold. So that's that. But people were so scared because the video of it last night, he just looked just in shock. And one of the things about that, Tommy, is when you see something like that, again, social media amplifies every way. So when you see that, you're like, man, this is the coronavirus, blah, 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 blah. And then it just goes on to a completely different rabbit trail.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Going to the phones where Richard Davenport is waiting on us. Richard, good morning. It's been a tough last couple of the days, man. I'm sure that you have been busy with all the recruiting news that's been coming out, dealing with spring practice and what's going to happen forward going on with the recruiting circuit.
Yeah, well, definitely. And, you know, they had a busy Saturday. Had about 30 to 40 kids on campus, and it was a very productive day. Most of the top prospects either said that Arkansas was one of the top schools on their list after the visit, or was the number one school on their list. So it was a good day for Arkansas.
So, Richard, I know that some schools have already suspended their spring game. They're going to postpone it, push it back. What have you heard out of the Arkansas football program as far as recruits go, them still coming on campus, and then as far as what could potentially happen with the spring game in April?
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't really checked on the spring game yet, but from what I understand, nothing's been decided as far as not having any kids come on campus in the future. Now, obviously, that could change with this situation being so fluid. But as of now, as far as I know, they're still going to start keep hosting kids.
Richard, do you think the NCAA at some point, obviously, recruiting is not the biggest priority in the recruiting calendar. But could you see maybe some adjustments to that somewhere down the road in the future? Because obviously parents are unwilling to travel with their kids, send their kids on trips, get on planes. Campuses and universities are shutting down their normal operations right now at many places. It would make sense to me that at some point the NCAA might come back and say, all right, we're going to extend the recruiting calendar of these open periods a little bit later in the year, because essentially it became closed when you know due to extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, I could see that, because April 1st is the when you can start hosting kids for official visits in football. And say if the NCAA decides, you can't host kids during that period, obviously I think that they would probably come back later and say, well, we'll extend that the time that you can have kids on campus for official visits, maybe during the summer, because it's only a certain amount of time during the summer. So that would only make sense, because it's the calendar is so loaded early because of how the recruiting process has just escalated over the years, and kids are making decisions so much quicker. So, yeah, if something like that happened, I think the NCAA would adjust the calendar.
You know, I know things have kind of unfolded very rapidly over the last 24, 36 hours as far as cancellation of events, campuses changing their policies. Have you talked to any recruits, or do you think there's going to be some nervousness or apprehension? I can't imagine taking my kid on a recruiting visit of all things right now with everything going on in the world.
Well, I didn't talk to any kids last night, but the earlier in the week I was talking to kids, and several are already planning to make some visits to Arkansas next week. So I don't think, unless their parents come up with some information and make some money easy, that they decide, well, let's just hold off on it. But as of now, some of the kids that I've talked to didn't indicate any kind of concern about the virus or anything like that to cancel.
Richard Davenport with us on the Morning Rush on a Recruiting Thursday. Richard, how badly does DJ Arkansas need to end up a Razorback? It just fits, man.
yeah, and he knows that, and his parents know that, just the name and everything. But, he did visit on Saturday. He had a great time. It was about what he expected. Sometimes kids come out and just say, man, I was just blown away. And then, don't get me wrong, he definitely was impressed. But he said, like he said, hey, Arkansas is an SEC school. It should be very nice. I think he's intrigued with Arkansas, and he hears about the name and how it would connect well with Arkansas if he decided to be a Razorback. But at the same time, he's still considering other schools.
So the Ivy League, Richard, not only did they cancel their basketball tournament, they've canceled sports through the rest of the way. And I know a lot of student athletes that may be juniors or seniors going through rehab or whatever, or trying to play their final year, they're very disappointed, they're very aggravated. Do you think the NCAA would grant them waivers based on everything that's occurred for them to have an additional year playing sports?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it's a situation where right now everybody's kind of guessing, what to do. And, I think we all kind of look at this situation and go, well, boy, it seems like they're really overstepping their bounds. But at the same time, only time will tell. Probably 6 months, a year from now, we'll fully know how bad this situation is, if maybe they overstepped their bounds or not. So, I tend to think that they're obviously, being cautious, but I would assume the NCAA would start, after all this is all, the dust is settled, would kind of consider everything and maybe make some adjustments as far as eligibility and stuff like that.
Richard, a little closer to home is, people are going to stay home and watch things on TV. One of the things you can watch if you don't attend in Hot Springs is the high school basketball state championships. There's some players that worth noting, as Devontae Davis with Jacksonville, Alana Eaton, who signed with Mike Neighbors' team plays for Nettleton, and some other great players are going to be involved in playing this weekend. State championship games, as we know it, scheduled to begin a little bit later this morning as Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for the state championship games in Hot Springs.
Yeah, and we talked about the young man last week, Darian Ford, for Magnolia. They had a close call last week and against Brooklyn, but were able to prevail, and they'll be playing Mills. I think that last year was a great game. I think this year is going to be a great game. And like you said, Devontae Davis and Jacksonville gives Arkansas fans an opportunity to see see a future Razorback and maybe another future Razorback.
What do you see moving
Richard with Brayton?
Go ahead, Ty.
Sorry, Tommy. Sorry, I guess it was a little delayed real quick. With Brayden Bratcher, Richard, preferred walk-on out of Pulaski Academy, I know he was getting looked at some other schools, but he's decided he's going to take that PWO at Arkansas. What position do you see him trying to play up there on the hill?
I would assume quarterback. I saw him play this past season, and you know, he's just a playmaker. You know, I haven't seen enough of him through a full game because the game that I saw was lopsided and he didn't play a whole lot after a half. But I would assume that that's the position. I haven't been able to talk to him just yet, but I would assume that's the position that he would play.
When you look at what's going on with Sam Pittman and his staff right now, and we talked about just kind of some of the recruiting visits, there's been more videos and stuff out there. Just kind of what you think's going on with Sam Pittman and kind of where he's taken things from kind of the beginning through now as we get ready for, like I said, scheduled visits coming up. How would you grade things out right now in the way Pittman and his staff have handled things so far?
I would say very good. It would be, you know, it'd be an A-minus, maybe B-plus, or, you know, it'd probably be in that area. I think what you know, with Coach Pittman, obviously a lot of kids don't know a lot about him, and to be able to see him on video gives them a little bit of an insight of how he is and how he interacts with the players. You know, obviously a lot of the kids are talking to him on the phone because of recruiting, but to be able to see him interact with the players that are on campus and just get to know him a little bit better, I think, is a good thing for Arkansas and for him. And I think he recognizes that. And anytime you can give insight to the program, not only just I know the fans, you know, love it, but the kids really do look at that stuff and you know, watch how, you know, the coaches interact with the players and just. A lot of times it's just a hype deal, too, and just kind of gets you excited about the program, too.
Richard, appreciate your insight and analysis every Thursday on a Recruiting Thursday. We'll talk a week from today, man.
All right, guys. We'll see you.
So one of the things I hope the NCAA would do, Tommy, is like when I asked Richard with the Ivy League canceling the rest of the sports, and you can't really do it as much in college basketball because of the point of the season we're in and the other stuff, but if a season gets canceled, and whether it's baseball or softball, if there's another sport that I'm forgetting that is really in this stretch of the spring, I would hope that the NCAA, if this does happen, grants those kids eligibility, because some are coming off rehab, some this is their final year to make an impact, to play somewhere professionally. I mean, surely the NCAA would have the foresight and the wherewithal to do that if that indeed happens, where they cancel some sports this spring.
Again, let's remember, who is the NCAA? It's the member institutions, it's their presidents, their chancellors, their ADs. They set the policies. I mean, you know, we can blame the NCAA, but these leaders can meet. They're on committees. They're able to form and shape policy through the conferences and through the NCAA. That if that's what's needed, you know, if a player missed half or more of a season, yeah, they should probably be able to apply for an extra season. But you know, let's not get the cart too far in front of the horse. Let's see what happens over the next couple of weeks. The season that it could affect the most is baseball season. You know, you've played, what, Arkansas, what, 11-5? So you played 16 games. You got 40 games left in front of you on the schedule. You know, you could see a dramatic impact on the baseball or the softball schedules moving forward. They got a majority of their season in front of them. For basketball, you're down to your championship games and a handful. You're in the last 5 or 10% or some, for some schools less than that, of their season remaining. So I think, you know, we'll just see it, how it unfolds. Those are conversations that obviously you can debate somewhere down the road at some point.
All right, so let's talk about what's actually happened at this point, which is the basketball games. We talked a little bit about what occurred in the Vanderbilt game last night. We haven't touched on any audio yet, so we can go ahead and do that. The funniest question, Tommy, came from Bob Holt last night to Eric Musselman, and his response about the officiating last night was quite entertaining.
Yeah, Eric, I think I know why you got that technical. I mean, Isaiah looked like he drew a charge, and it looked like Mason was just blocking out, and they both got called for fouls. Was that what the technical was about, or what would be your thoughts on that?
No thoughts. You know, there's a lot of good shopping here in Nashville, and so I'm going to let my wife spend the money and not give it to anybody else. So I'd refrain from saying anything.
Good answer.
Tommy, we can talk about – yeah, great answer. We can talk about how many hours you spend in recruiting. We can talk about the different things you have to do as a head coach. But is the most difficult thing to do as a coach in collegiate athletics or professional athletics to refrain from criticizing officiating so you don't get a fat fine?
I don't know.
Is that the hardest thing to do?
I don't think that's probably the hardest thing to do. Probably the hardest thing to do is motivating your players, figuring out what button to push, what angle to take that day. But, you know, there were some things that happened at the end of the game that obviously left him frustrated. The foul on Jones. The timeout that they were requesting on the floor, but a jump ball was called instead. I don't think it was one thing that led him to run down the box, the coaching box, running down the sideline, and he'd already been given a bench warning earlier in the game. It was just a buildup of those things that led to him getting a technical that doesn't mean anything with a minute 7 to go in the ball game. The game was over at that point. So I'm of the belief he doesn't react that way, doesn't respond that way if it was a 5-point game or a 3-point game. He knew that at that point he had a little more leash because of the lead the team had.
Well, speaking of motivation, Tommy, I'll tell you who was motivated last night. Reggie Chaney and Ethan Henderson.
Oh, they blocked everything. You know, Saban Lee and the other guards were trying to go to the paint, and you see Ethan and Reggie come with blocks out of nowhere. They made a lot of blocks tonight, and it really helped us get points and fast break points and transition points. So they played today. It was incredible, and we're going to need that tomorrow. So we need them to get rest, and we need the whole team to get rest.
Tommy, I know that Ethan Henderson only finished but 3 blocks, but he probably altered another 6 or so shots. And Reggie Chaney, I thought he was going to Shaquille O'Neal bring the goal down last night on that hammer dunk that he had where he almost put his opponent through the rim. Their energy, their effort, and again, we have to factor in that it was Vanderbilt. It was the worst team in the SEC. But for a guy in Ethan Henderson that hasn't played well in road games this season, you're encouraged by some of the things you saw last night. And for Reggie, it finally looked like that he was woken up. Now, I know that people weren't too happy about the tech. I didn't have a problem with the tech, to be honest. Like, if someone I think does something dirty, like a Bush League foul or something to my guy, and I get a tech and I get yelled at by a coach, I'm okay with that because I will always come to my teammate's defense when there's something to be taken issue with.
He wasn't running in to break up a fight. He was just running his mouth. I mean, that's all he was doing was talking. He was just talking.
Yeah, because Isaiah Joe just got tackled, Tommy.
I understand. They were leaving and heading towards the bench areas. But is that worth giving up one of your fouls? You get 5 fouls in a game. Do you want to give up one of your 5 fouls to just mouth, to talk? I mean, you got to think about
that.
You get a budget of 5 fouls a game. Do you want to give one up for that?
Well, Reggie wasn't going to play the end of the game last night. I'm just telling you from my perspective.
I get it. You want to protect your bros. I get it. But do you want to give up one of your fouls for it? Is it worth that much to you?
Tommy, it was at the point of the game, like you were talking about with Musselman, it didn't matter. Now Coach Muss is always going to say it does matter and that players shouldn't get the text. I understand that. But there's just always that factor that you have to think about. And I understand where you're coming from, but there's also this mindset that you have as a teammate that if you feel like something's going to happen, you feel like they're pushing, shoving, or doing whatever, then you're like, stop. Because Isaiah is the NBA guy in that locker room. He is one of your best players. He is important as it gets to this basketball team. We saw it when he was out for the season. So if you feel like that whoever, whether it's Vanderbilt, whether it's South Carolina or not, or whatever, is fouling him too hard or something. You feel like it's going over the top, and sometimes it just boils over.
Excessive contact. I agree. There were some hard fouls in that game. I don't think they got to the level of flagrant, but there was some contact in that game that seemed more excessive than a routine common foul. I agree with you.
I understand. Like, I get Muss's in your perspective, but I also get Reggie's perspective. I think it's kind of a back and forth thing on that. But so South Carolina,
what it does though is it limit the amount? If you're in, put yourself in Muss's shoes, does that chip away a little more at the trust with Reggie? That hey, this guy isn't a guy that can keep his emotions in check. This is a guy that could, his pot could boil over at the wrong moment and cost your team in a tight ball game. I mean, it's just one more of those things that it makes you worry. Do you want Reggie Chaney out there in a key moment in the game because something like that could happen?
I'm curious to what he said to Reggie behind closed doors. I don't think that question was asked in the press conference last night, but that'd be something that only Reggie and Eric actually know about. Let's go to the South Carolina game tonight. So Arkansas lost to the Gamecocks earlier this season by 2. They had a chance. Isaiah Joe kind of had a fall-away 3 at the end to potentially win it. This was one of these games. I believe he was playing injured, if I remember that correctly, the timeline on that. Here's Mason Isaiah on the matchup against the Gamecocks.
Well, there's no advantage, to be honest. Everybody's just got to come ready to play, and I feel like we're going to go back to the hotel, get some rest, and wake up in the morning and prepare like South Carolina. I know we're going to come ready to play tomorrow, and I know it's a bounce-back game. We know we want to beat them this time, and they beat us at the crib, so, we're going to have that on our mind the whole night.
We just got to come out and play our game. We got to play harder than them because they're a real aggressive team. We got to play harder than them, smarter than them. And we have to play on both ends of the floor. This game was a good win, but now we got to put it in the past and focus on South Carolina.
That's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, it's not going to be an easy one. So something to monitor tonight, and we'll see if revenge plays a factor into this one tonight.
Make free throws. That's going to be a key for tonight's game because I think Arkansas is going to have a lot of chances at the free throw line tonight.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
We're live in Nashville. Ty, you're at the DoubleTree. A lot of uncertainty. We've talked about all the scenarios today as the SEC tournament. I presume for the first time ever it's going to be played with very limited crowd. I know they did it in Atlanta after the tornado, but that's a different set of circumstances. That was weather-related. Mm-hmm. This is health-related. This, is to me, has just a much different feel than it did, some 12 years ago or whatever.
No, you're exactly right. And Eric Musselman was asked about that, what it's going to be like to play without fans. Tommy Jenkins, here's what he said.
We go play basketball the way that they tell us to. I'm not an expert on anything really going on other than what I read on social media and stuff, and kind of is what it is. And both teams are going to play in that environment tomorrow and for the rest of the tournament. One thing I am glad, I'm really glad that our guys got to play tonight, in front of fans. I think that, probably one of the last times this year where there'll be fans, and they got an opportunity to experience that in a great environment. I mean, for a first game on the first night of a tournament, it was a great turnout. Obviously, it's the severity and the seriousness of this is well beyond anything that, a coach or a player or whatever.
So, Tommy, I will give Arkansas fans credit. I saw an Arkansas guy driving up in his truck when I left on Tuesday, and there were a decent amount of Arkansas fans there last night. Now, I don't know population-wise what the number of Razorback fans live in Nashville. There's a decent amount, but I know a decent amount made the trip up here to the Music City. Unfortunately, even though that the Razorbacks are still participating, they're not going to be able to watch their guys in the arena.
Yeah, my brother drove all the way to Nashville. He was there at the game last night. There was some clients, and I don't know if they'll find – I didn't talk to him today. I don't know if they're going to find other things to do in Nashville, go places and watch the games since they're already there, and, your accommodations, everything already taken care of, or if you head on back. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people are there, they flew in, and, we talk about Allegiant and their schedules. They're pretty rigid. I mean, a lot of people are there and probably going to be there for the duration of the weekend because that's what their travel agenda says. So there's probably a lot of people that were going to leave today or leave yesterday that made the decision to not go. So there's definitely just been, you know, a lot of people's plans, and a lot of people center their vacation every year around this event, and everybody's plans are kind of up in the air right now.
Tommy, just as a former resident in Nashville, I know you'd much rather go to the tournament that you came to go to, but I think they'll be able to find something to do. I'm going to go on a stretch, go on a limb and say I think they'll manage here if they do want to stay through the weekend, but it's – go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, there's a reason they're canceling the availability for the crowds to go to the game. I mean, do you want to go out and be amongst strangers in a town that you're not from where – people have come from all parts of the country, and when there's such a health risk and scare, I mean, you know, yeah, there's plenty to do, but is that what you want to be doing, is going to all the honky-tonks in Nashville and not knowing who might call for sneeze on you at this point? I mean, I hate to have to live in a world like that where we're worried about those kind of things, but that's unfortunately where we find ourselves at this morning.
I need to get some medical justification if alcohol kills the germs associated with the coronavirus. If that, not just the rubbing alcohol that you mentioned, but the actual alcohol that is amongst the Broadway. I think it does, right, Tommy?
No,
didn't we go over this? Didn't we justify this earlier?
I think that's the millennial approach that you're trying to find. But again, young man, this is not a joking matter. This is a very serious matter. Don't be taking it so lightly.
Yeah, that's true. So, as far as Eric Musselman goes, he has, Tommy, he has some experience in playing against, what's Jenkins laughing over there about?
At you. Just laughing at you.
So. Okay. Very, very fair. All right. So the minor league situation that Eric Musselman's been a part of, y'all, there weren't a lot of people at those games. So he has some experience as far as coaching in not necessarily these type of situations, but situations where there's not a lot of
people. On the flip side of it or whatever, like for me, I just told the guys in the locker room, I mean, if you spend a lot of years in the minor leagues, you play in front of a lot of empty arenas, and it comes down to being a competitor. There's not going to be momentum swings based on a crowd or the noise in the building. There's going to be momentum swings like there are in the park when you play on a Saturday or a Sunday. I told them, some of them before the game even, because we knew, you know, something could possibly happen as we were reading stuff on social media, and then I brought it up just now, like, you know, what would Kobe Bryant do? How hard would he play tomorrow? Would he worry about crowd or no crowd, or would he go compete because there's a scoreboard up?
Yeah, so I think Tommy, with that, he at least has some experience in these types of situations, so he knows. I mean, he's a good motivator, it seems like. Does he have an additional edge on some of these other coaches that might not have necessarily been these non-fan type situations?
That's a good question. I think what you have to do is you got to create your own juice. You know, you got to create your own energy. You got to find a way that to feed off something other than a crowd. So, you know, in Atlanta, when the tornado hit, they moved to a slightly smaller venue, but it was still a college arena. This is going to be, you know, playing in the Grand Canyon with 300 people in the stands, or whatever they're going to. That's about what it will be there when this thing's all said and done. So, you know, you're going to have to find a way to motivate yourself as a team, to find the juice, to get that adrenaline pumping, and do something that doesn't feed off the fans.
Let's go to the phone lines. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text if you want to get on this last segment here on the Morning Rush. Robert is in Fort Smith. Robert, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey guys, real quick, I'd like to know, if I'm not able to go to my baseball games up there on the hill, they're gonna give me my money back, you know? I mean, yeah. I know y'all can't really tell me that, but I'm just, it's kind of wondering, you know, what happens with all that if we're not able to go, you know?
Well, they're going to come out. All right, thanks, Robert. They're going to come out with some guidelines or some plans. But if you're a season ticket holder or you bought single game tickets, and obviously it doesn't affect Arkansas this weekend for baseball, and I know Robert's asking about baseball, the ticket office is working on a procedure or plan to do that. I've already seen that online. So, yes, you will get your money back if you're a regular season ticket holder or if you bought single game tickets. So, be looking for details on that. I saw that last night from the university on social media, Ty, and I'm sure that's on people's minds. And I think the schools probably have some insurance to offset some of this, but it's just, you know, for schools like Arkansas, it's not a individual choice. This is the choice that the conference has made. This is the decision, and probably the right decision at this point until you have more information about what's going on with this virus.
And Tommy talked about it earlier. We had a caller from who bought tickets from Vivid Seats that he had the option to either be reimbursed for the full amount or get a 120% credit on the tickets he bought. And they are not, I think we determined that they're not contractually obligated to do that. But in order to get your future business, they're not going to screw you out of what happened with the thing not occurring. So don't be surprised if you see several organizations doing this just so they can keep their regular customer base that they have, Tommy.
Yeah, you're going to see airlines, hotel chains, you know, big like Hilton, you know, has many hotel brands. The last thing you want to do is make a customer feel like they were got unfair treatment when this has nothing to do at all with, you know, with any individual customer. Their plans didn't change. Everyone's plans have changed. So this is just, you know, it's a hit on the economy. It's a hit to the travel industry in particular. I know if you dared travel right now, you can buy flights to a lot of places very cheap right now, but who wants to risk it? You know, airports are going to be lonely places here coming up.
Yeah. So which economic impact do you think it hits the most, Tommy? If you had to single out something, what are we going to see the most affected by?
Well, travel industry. I mean, cruise ships and cruise lines are already affected. Do you want to be on a cruise ship right now? Would you want to head down to Galveston or New Orleans and get on a cruise right now? I don't think very many people are signing up, no matter how cheap it is. They were paying you to go. You're probably not going right now. So, I mean, the travel industry in general is going to probably take the hardest hit out of this because I think people are going to, you know, stay at home. Now, I hope people aren't unwilling to get out of their homes until it hits your community. And here in Arkansas, it hasn't. We need to go about our business. Now wash your hands, take precautions, the kind of things that make common sense. But, you know, it's not going to keep me from going to Sam's and buying groceries or going to Harps or wherever and buying groceries. But I think you're going to see people that make that decision. I think until it becomes a factor in your community, wherever you live, you know, go about your daily business with some common sense approaches to it, like hand washing and hand sanitizing and things of that nature. That just, to me, that's how I'm going to look at it.
My dad always tells me in times when you're worried about your immune system just to drink a lot of OJ because of the vitamin C.
Yeah.
So I would kind of like, if you want to strengthen your immune system, drink or take vitamins with heavily concentrated of vitamin C amounts to get that. And I was joking earlier about the drinking aspect of that. I just sent Tommy a little Twitter thing, but alcohol, for those who don't know, doesn't help your immune system. It typically hurts it, right? Like, I'm not a doctor or anything, but I believe it is negatively affected in some way,
don't
right?
Don't know that your judgment on your hygiene and your hand washing and you know, all that stuff is probably real good if you're inebriated.
I've heard tequila can always be your best friend.
Yeah.
Bruce in Fort Smith asks, are they going to pump in crowd noise at the SEC tournament? I kind of agree with Tommy. They're going to make it a story that there's no one there. Like, the broadcast is going to really heavily concentrate and pick up on as much as they can. I mean, they're going to be able – they don't even need, like, to put a mic on Muss and Frank Martin tonight, Tommy, because they're going to be able to hear everything they say on the court.
Yeah, they may need to keep their hand on the button. Whatever button it is that dumps audio, they may need to keep their hand on that button because it's all going to be heard tonight. In an empty Bridgestone arena.
It's like Tom said earlier when we had Tom Murphy on. He said when he was watching a Bob Huggins coach team in Puerto Rico, how many times. Now, I don't think Muss has the same type of cursing usage that Bob Huggins does, but he said it was just wild that he could hear every curse word that Huggins had to say when he was down there. I think that's pretty amazing. And so I'll
Huggy deals in high volume on that. He gets a volume discount generally.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's been a good show today. Again, we'll have airtime for you at 7. I think it's 7:50 tonight that we'll start things going on ESPN Arkansas. Game will be 25 minutes following the conclusion of the first game that begins at 6 tonight. For Matt Jenkins and Tommy Kraft, I'm Ty Richardson. Don't spend life sitting on your hands. We're live from the Doubletree Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee.
You're now number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.